Hello and welcome to Save, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we have an episode for you about Chili Crisp.
Which I love.
Would have guessed that based on your general affinity for spicy things. But, oh yeah, no, me too. Lovely.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Was there any particular reason this was on your mind?
That's a great question.
All right. Perhaps the answer will come to you. Maybe it's always there in the back, you know.
Probably this was, this has just been on our list since the pandemic, and it went really big, and people went like, oh, what about that?
Yeah, that is certainly something we're going to talk about. And funnily enough that you mentioned that, I remember specifically when I was introduced to Chili Crisp.
Oh, yeah?
I believe I had had it before, but I remember, like, the very specific, this is what it is, like, this is my favorite ingredient. It was a friend of ours, actually, and I loved it, and it was during the pandemic. But they had, like, used it long before, but that was the first time I remember being like,
oh yeah, I want this.
This is amazing.
I feel like I probably first encountered it at one of the Malaysian restaurants around Atlanta. And I think that this particular place made their own in-house and sold jars of it and had it as a condiment on tables. And I was just like, yep. Yes.
Yeah, I feel like I had it as a condiment on tables before. But this was the specific instance where I was like, wait, what is
hold
this?
On.
I can have it my I can have it my home. Okay. So for past episodes, you can see Szechuan peppercorns, hot sauces, peppers and chilies maybe that we've done.
Sure.
Other things.
other condiments. Just probably re-listen to catch up. You know, every time we talk about condiments, it's probably in there somewhere.
That's true. That episode, surprisingly, covered a lot of ground. but, all right, I guess this brings us to our question.
I guess.
Chili Crisp. What is it?
Well, Chili Crisp is a type of condiment that can contain many things, but you're basically looking at bits of, like, savory, spicy stuff, including, yes, dried chili flakes, that are dried and or fried to a crisp and then steeped in oil, creating a crunchy yet silky condiment that adds a burst of red-orange color and heady spice to whatever you put it on. Depending on what you're going for, all kinds of other stuff can find its way into Chili Crisp. Pike and onion or garlic, chopped small, maybe caramelized, rich, roasted, crushed peanuts or sesame seeds, some funky fermented soybeans, savory mushroom powder, fishy savory dried anchovies or shrimp, maybe some fish sauce, warm spices like cinnamon or star anise or ginger, maybe some salt or a bit of sugar to balance the spice. The oil can be a neutral carrier, or it can be flavorful, like a peanut or sesame oil. The heat can vary as much or little as you like. A spoonful of it is just a delicate little flavor bomb, like really pleasingly crisp and or chewy, but also smooth, and with those heavy, savory flavors balanced out by that, like, fruity, spicy note. It's like bizarro jam. Like everything that jam is not, but still a condiment. It's like if the perfect snack chip were a condiment. It's like the excitement and mild surprise of opening presents, but you can eat it.
Yeah, it's lovely. It's just like the crunch of it, and the smoothness. There's like so many like things that go together really well but are different.
Yeah, kind of contrasting, but yeah.
Like, meld together perfectly.
So well.
So pleasing, yes.
and then whatever you put it on, too, like surprising things that you would not think that it would go with, it totally goes with.
I put it on all kinds of things. I'm just like, what if I try it here? Oh, okay. It doesn't always work, but a lot of times it does.
Yeah. I just realized that I've never put it on, like, peanut butter toast.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I, okay, all right, projects for as soon as we finish recording. Chili crisp is a sort of subcategory of condiments under the wider umbrella of chili oil, in which, more broadly, oils are flavored with dried chilies and other aromatics. Chili crisp stands out because it includes the sediment of those aromatics. It includes, like, quite a bit of it. It's part of the point. Yeah. Different styles do emphasize different flavors. You can go pretty basic or incorporate whatever combination of the above add-ins and beyond. You know, different types of chili peppers will add different fruity or floral flavors and different levels of heat. Numbing peppercorns are a popular, like, subcategory. Various cooked-down alliums, from shallot to garlic to onion, will give their own savory sweet punch. You know, there are riffs that add curry leaves or crushed almonds or lemongrass for something yet again different. There are a number of brands available for purchase, or you can make your own at home to really individualize it. If you are doing this, know that one of the keys here is making sure that all of your ingredients are, like, dehydrated as much as possible. For example, from, like, gentle, low and slow pan frying. Anything with water content is going to make the mix less crispy. Not really what you want, and less shelf stable. Also not really what you want.
Mm-mm.
But yeah, it's used on its own or mixed into other condiments or sauces, generally post-cooking, though it can stand up to the sort of, like, gentle heat that you'd use to make a pasta sauce, maybe. So it's really good for dressing up noodles or rice or toast or other starches. Put it on roasted meats or veg. Use it as a dip or maybe a slather for dumplings or French fries. Spread it on sandwiches, you know, like a sauce for eggs. Drizzle on fruit salad or some kind of creamy dessert, like a chocolate whatever or ice cream. Drizzle it on your popcorn. I cannot stop you.
I will be doing that. And the French fries thing. I don't think I've ever had it on French fries.
I don't think I have either. These are all very important projects.
They are. When the pandemic first started, I was regularly making, I would fry eggplant and rice and scallions and then chili crisp on top of
it. Oh, yeah.
So I do have an association with this. But that was delicious.
Yeah.
I've actually been craving. I kind of want to go back and make it. All right. Well, what about the nutrition?
You know, it depends on what's in it. It is in an oil base, so that's always going to be a little bit calorically dense. But you're not eating, like, that much of it. Maybe. it can be heavy on the sodium, so, like, watch out for that if that's something that you watch out for. But, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, people do like it, and we have some numbers to back it up.
Oh, we do?
Yes. So popular brand Lao Gen Ma reportedly produces 1.3 million bottles a day as of 2022.
Just for contrast, Heinz produces 1.8 million bottles of ketchup a day. So they're only, like, 500,000 bottles behind Heinz.
Yeah. And in 2009, this product, Lao Gen Ma, made about $64 million.
So ooh, yeah. Mm-hmm. As of 2016, Bloomberg credited this brand with financial growth in the province where it's from, Guizhou, of 10.5%. That's a lot. That's a lot of growth.
That is a lot of growth. And speaking of, in the U.S., the sales of this product went up substantially during the pandemic, perhaps increasing as much as 1,900%.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And interest has not gone down from there. According to Google Trends, which I know is not a perfect source, but at any rate, according to Google Trends, we hit another two all-time spikes of interest in September of 2023 and January of 2024. The first big spike was in April of 2020. And that interest is centered in the United States, but also expands to Canada, Singapore, Norway, Sweden, New Zealand, and the UK. Y'all write in. Let us know if this has been a wild trend, whereabouts you are.
Yes. And if it was already there and you have thoughts about it, or recipes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Uses.
Uh-huh.
But in the meantime, we do have quite a history for you.
Oh, we do, and we're going to get into that as soon as we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this,
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so different episode. We've talked about this in a lot of episodes, though. Mm-hmm. But briefly, chili peppers arrived in China at least 200 years ago, but possibly as far back as the 16th century with Dutch and Portuguese explorers. Once they arrived via globalization and trade, they slowly spread across the country, but they really took off in the Southwest because of the climate. But it did take a few decades before they started to really become incorporated into the cuisine, particularly as a seasoning or condiment, since chili peppers, it was cheaper to use them than salt and local Szechuan peppercorns at the time. However, these condiments weren't what we would think of today when we think of chili crisp, or at least for most of us, it wouldn't be the same. Though it's very likely some of them were pretty similar.
Yeah. Different cuisines all over the region flavored oil with chilies in different amounts and with different additions based on local availability and preferred flavor profiles. You know, hotter or saltier or spiced or savory or numbing or funky or whatever combination of the above.
Right. But let us jump way ahead to what many of us do think of when we think of chili crisp, and that would be the popular brand Lao Gan Ma, which launched in Guizhou, China in 1984. Because a lot of that history has been lost or is perhaps a little bit more complicated to go into for this episode, but...
Mm-hmm. Yes. This is a province located in the mountains of southwest China in between Sichuan and Hunan.
And this product was the creation of Tao Huabi, who sold it at her noodle shop that she opened as a widow as a way to support her family. And this condiment was so popular, she bottled it and started selling it in 1997. And she closed her noodle shop to focus solely on the sauce at that time. And this is when she opened Lao Gan Ma Special Flavor Foodstuffs Company. And it employed 40 people in the beginning. She was the eighth daughter born into a poor family in Guizhou in 1947, and she never attended school, and she didn't learn to read or write as a child. According to a biography of her, she survived a famine by eating plant roots, and after the death of her husband, she opened a noodle shop, and she made the sauce to go alongside it. And eventually, this shop grew into something bigger called the Economical Restaurant in the 1990s. And around this time, a new highway brought more customers the shop's way, and she would gift truckers with free bottles of this sauce, and they loved it so much, and the word would spread from there. And she saw the potential. She set up this factory in the area in 1996, and yes, she started selling the jars in 1997. If you've never seen this jar, which I'd wager that you have, it features a depiction of an older woman kind of scowling.
Yeah.
That is Tao Hua Bi. The name of the product roughly translates to old godmother. And in 2017, she was named the hottest woman in China at the age of 70. I tried to get to the bottom of, like, who named her this? It seems to have been the result of a social media trend, and the social media platform was like, the hottest woman in China.
Yeah.
Yes. And she did retire a billionaire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Apparently, she drives like a limited edition Rolls with these red rear view mirrors and a license plate with a lot of eights in it because eight is a lucky number. And yeah.
Yes.
Love that for her.
Yeah. yeah, and the condiment did sell well pretty quickly. First in China, but as word spread, it started to sell internationally too. But at first, they had a lot of trouble with counterfeiters, which resulted in a lengthy lawsuit about the trademark. That was settled relatively recently, like I think in the early 2000s. But it was a whole thing. Yeah. I guess that to me, that feels recent, but that says something about when I guess that wasn't that long after she launched the project. So a lot has been written about how this brand had such a meteoric rise. And there are all kinds of factors speculated that may have contributed to its success, from marketing. Yes. The quote I saw kitschy to describe the label. A lot of times, the kitschy label drew people in. It was viewed as sort of a, again, quote, simple product in a way people really liked, almost representative of the region it was from and embracing that. It had this history behind it. People liked that. And of course, globalization, immigration, increasing interest in spicy foods and foods from other places and in that particular region and cuisine for people outside of China. Anyway. Mm-hmm. For a long time, as Chinese immigrants arrived in the U.S., the mainstream palate for Chinese food amongst non-Chinese folks was a less spicy one. And that started to shift in 1965 when restrictions on Chinese immigration to the U.S. were lifted. Previous to that, many of the Chinese immigrants in the U.S. were from regions of China where food was less spicy, perhaps. But after that restriction was lifted, a much wider range of Chinese cuisine and spice from that cuisine made it into the U.S. And Chili Crisp was part of that. So yes, Chili Crisp experienced a huge, huge boom in the U.S. in the late 2010s, early 2020s. It was often referred to in the American press or in quotes from folks that it was the new sriracha. So like even people on social media were calling it that. Some people do think that the timing of this suggests that many of us in the U.S. who are stuck at home and looking for shelf-stable ways to spice up dishes, a lot of us turned to Chili Crisp when that was happening.
During the pandemic, yeah.
During the pandemic, exactly. But also other things powered the surge in interest, including growing U.S. interest in Sichuan cuisine and increased exposure through media to things some perhaps didn't know about before. Celebrities and chefs got in on this game. Viral uses and combos from China about things like ice cream and Chili Crisp were replicated in the U.S. Social media just in general helped, too, because we're seeing people like, oh,
yeah,
looks
yeah.
good.
and a lot of the popular iterations did incorporate Sichuan peppercorns, so.
Right. And on top of that, as we have discussed previously, there is a growing culture, taste, and affinity for spicy foods in the U.S. Shortages of sriracha could have actually played into it, too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Couldn't get it all sriracha. Comes back around.
I know, right? On top of this, some articles chronicled Lao Gan Ma's story specifically, speculating that its popularity in China when it officially went commercial in 1997, points to some rediscovering food roots or heritage in China. And this was kind of a big conversation that happened. And not just with that brand. In an NBC News article, Jing Gao, the creator of the brand Fly by Jing, said that she faces criticism online for marked up prices. And here's a quote. from that article. The reason people think expensive Chinese food is whitewashed is because only white people are commanding those prices, said Gao, who said her chili crisp contains 18 premium ingredients sourced exclusively in southwestern China. It's also saying that Chinese people don't deserve the same value for their craft and their heritage. So this was an interesting article because it was talking about, like, again, going back to that idea of, like, it's from this region. And that's part of its popularity in China as well, is that it is from here. And then having all these other brands not from China, which is not to say people can't experiment with it, but getting into the game and perhaps selling something very, very expensive. Yeah. Larger conversation, perhaps.
Yeah, it's always a conversation about, you know, what is appreciation and what is appropriation and how to kind of balance that, you know, like wanting to enjoy and share something that you have found delicious is great. But right, you know, like who's making the money? Where's the money going? Like how, you know, like are the farmers who are responsible for creating these amazing chili peppers in the region where they're from getting any of that money? Stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a complicated conversation. But yeah, Gao was interviewed pretty because so Fly By Jing originated as a Kickstarter in 2018 and really bloomed from there. Just by the way, they're not a sponsor, but they are having like an anniversary sale on their website right now. Go check it out. Gao was interviewed pretty extensively for a lot of these articles from the early pandemic. And her perspective is super interesting to hear because, right, like as a person who has heritage from there and, you know, part of her starting up this brand is her exploring this heritage and right, and trying to do it well and to fight against the stereotype that we do sometimes still have here in the United States that you know, like Chinese food is this, like, cheap thing that isn't expected to be very good, shouldn't cost much money, which is just a flattening of an insane number of individual cuisines and experiences, and B, right, is talking about this very narrow type of Americanized Chinese food. So
yes, that I've said it before, I'll say it again, but when I was in China, that was one of the biggest eye-openers for me. Was like I could go blocks over and be like, wow, this is a whole different world. this is a huge country. So yeah, it's just so much. It's good not to generalize and look into the nuances of it. Not put it in one lane.
Always.
So much.
And how delicious too.
Yeah.
To get to explore. Yeah.
Yes. There's so much to explore and it's great. Well, I believe that's what we have to say about Chili Crisp for now.
It is. We do have some listener mail for you, though, and we are going to get into that as soon as we get back from one more quick break for a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with Listener Mail. Oh, man. I'm almost out of chili crisp. It's not a good situation.
Oh, no.
I'm in.
Oh, dear. Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, good luck.
Thanks. Oh. All right. So we have a bit of a longer message today. Again, never feel bad about sending those.
Oh, yeah.
But we thought we would split this one up. And this one was in regards to comments we made about glass recycling in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Which it doesn't really happen in Atlanta.
Nope, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't. So, in response to that, Judy wrote, I was horrified to hear Lauren's comment that her area does not do glass recycling. And Annie, I believe you agreed. This sent me down a nostalgic rabbit hole.
Hmm.
I am a child of the 50s. This means my parents grew up during the Great Depression and were young adults during World War II. Those people didn't waste anything.
Hmm.
The modern term reduce, reuse, recycle could have been written by them, and I don't think a lot of younger people realize this. Plastics were new and were not everywhere like they are now. There were no plastic bags, for example. Our garbage bags were doubled up paper grocery bags. The kitchen bag usually had a folded newspaper in the bottom in case any sloppy garbage made it in there. We didn't have garbage disposals, so messy food scraps might get wrapped up in some more newspaper or possibly shut up in a jar. Fat drippings lived in a can in the fridge. If they were bacon drippings, you might cook with them. I don't know what they might have done with the rest of the cans. I know they were collected during the war to reuse for the war effort, but this was before my time. I remember my parents keeping a coffee can, real cans in those days, in the cabinet with bills that needed to be paid. Coffee cans were good for lots of workshop uses, too. Dad had them full of random screws and still good nails. And I do remember using old cans to clean paintbrushes from my childhood watercolor masterpieces.
Mm-hmm. Judy continues, most things came in cardboard or paper. Bakery boxes didn't have plastic windows. I know Wonder Bread was available, but we always bought our bread at the bakery and took it home in a waxed paper bag. Fresh fruits and vegetables just went in a paper bag until you got them home. Frozen vegetables came in boxes. So did ice cream. Back to glass. A milk and soda pop came in glass bottles. You paid a deposit on the bottles, so you returned them to the store to get your deposit back. The bottles were then returned to the dairy or bottling company to be washed and refilled. The only thing you threw out was the bottle cap. We lived across the street from a playground that attracted teenagers after dark. They would drink pop and leave the bottles behind, stashed in various out-of-the-way corners. My two good friends and I would go over during the day and liberate said bottles from their hiding places. After a few days, we would have enough to return the bottles to the store for the deposit and use that to buy ice cream. Jars were saved to put leftovers in the fridge, to toss those messy bits of garbage, or to be filled with things like buttons, paperclips, or any other little things you might want to save. Ah, well, old ladies get nostalgic. However, I admit to a certain amount of frustration over the overuse of plastic and the difficulty of using products that will be biodegradable or easily reused. Maybe we can learn something from those Depression-era kids. I think we could get manufacturers to go along.
That's the question.
It is the question, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, my grandparents are those Depression-era kids, all right? And I grew up a lot of the time hanging out with my grandparents, perhaps more than I did with my parents a lot of the time. And so I picked up on a lot of these habits. And like I was making chili on Sunday, and as I was like draining the excess fat off of the beef, I was cooking at someone else's house, and I was like, hey, do you want to keep this beef fat? You want to keep it, right? I'm just going to set it over here in a jar for you. Like that, right. It's just, and it's automatic. It's just a thing that I do. And I also have, as we've talked about in listener mail segments before, a really hard time letting go of jars because I'm like, but this is useful. I can put other stuff in it forever.
Right.
And especially because we don't heckin' recycle it, you know, like what else am I going to do with it? Like throw it away? That's lame.
I also, I buy my coffee in cans sometimes when I'm not buying like nice coffee. It's just like cans of Bustelo. And I do have a number of coffee tins just sitting around with spare screws and still good nails in them. Terrific use for those things. And other stuff like that. Yeah, it's, I don't know.
That was recently an SNL skit with Pedro Pascal, where he's playing like a Spanish mom.
Yeah, yeah.
And he had like the cookie tin, but it put all the sewing tools in there. Yeah. My mom's the same. And last time I went home, I'm usually the only one in the house that drinks coffee when I go home. Sometimes she drinks it, but usually it's just me. And she showed me this tin and she was like, so I keep the tin, but this is a different type of coffee that I put in there. It's like, okay, cool. So yeah, she does it too. I do it. It just feels like you can use that stuff again. It does come up in quite a few of our episodes. Fascinatingly, and kind of the like, as time progresses and we sort of go backwards and forth, we got rid of a lot of this stuff because of illness.
Right.
Because of the milk, especially milk-borne concerns about milk-borne illness in the glass. And people felt better to have the plastic, which was single use and they could throw away. But it's interesting now we're looking at ways to...
Right. We're going like, oh, this actually might not be better for anything. One of my, in a previous lifetime, one of the companies that I worked for is the maker of Dixie cups. And one of my jobs for them in marketing as a kind of, I don't know, marketing mercenary, a marketer for hire, sure, was to go through their archive of these commercials from the 60s and 70s for all of these old brands. And a lot of what you would see in these commercials were like, don't have a dirty cup that you wash sitting on your bathroom counter. Use clean Dixie cups that you throw away after every use. Like it was a major push for use of that product. And To me, that was kind of like kitschy and funny. I had friends who like really railed against it, like who were just like, no, that's evil. And I was like, well.
Yeah. And I do think there's something to be said for, there is a reason people do use disposable products.
Oh, sure.
Accessibility reasons, time.
Oh,
there are reasons.
Yeah. Many reasons.
Yes. But it is also true that we should be thinking about maybe some hybrid ways we can,
upon this. Right. And, you know, I don't know. Balancing the convenience of today versus, how long is this going to last in our environment?
Yep.
What's it leaching into our bodies? What's going on?
Yeah. Ooh, I have a friend who works on microplastics and she will tell you about it at a party and you'll be like, oh, wow, I feel bad and I'm going home. I love you if you're listening. But also we have had amazing listeners write in who are working on stuff like this. So we do always love hearing from you and the amazing stuff all of you are doing. And thanks to Judy for writing in about this. Yes. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We are also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, sometimes, @SaverPod. We do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ plus bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.